can't really define the right action until you know the outcome you're after. And your outcome is disconnected from reality if you're not clear about what you need to do physically to make it happen. You can get at it from either direction, and you must to get things done. As Steven Snyder, an expert in whole brain learning and a friend of mine, put it, there are only two problems in life. One, you know what you want and you don't know how to get it. And or two, you don't know what you want. If that's true, and I think it is, then there are only two solutions. Make it up, make it happen. This can be construed from the models of yin-yang, right brain, left brain, creator-destroyer, visionary-implementer, or whatever equivalent framework works best for you. The truth is, our energy as human beings seems to have a dualistic and teleological reality. We create and identify with things that aren't yet real on all the levels we experience, and when we do, we recognize how to restructure our current world to morph it into the new one and experience an impetus to make it so. Things that have your attention need your intention engaged. What does this mean to me? Why is it here? What do I want to have be true about this? What's the desired outcome? Everything you experience as incomplete must have a reference point for complete. Once you've decided that there is something to be changed and a mold to fill, you ask yourself, how do I now make this happen? And or what resources do I need to allocate to make it happen? What's the next action? By this point, you've probably noticed that getting things done is not some new technology or invention. It simply makes explicit the principles at work within what we all do implicitly. But with that awareness, you can then leverage those principles consciously to create more elegant results. Your life and work are made up of outcomes and actions that you engage in more or less consciously. Whether they are merely less than conscious responses to your environment, or more conscious results of your directed focus, is the choice you will always have. If you have any intention to expand your experiences and expressions beyond simply being at the mercy of the world as it comes at you, the opportunity is there to recognize, develop, and master the art of getting things done. The challenge will continually be to apply the two essential elements of this art, defining what done means and what doing looks like. This is not always that easy, especially when dealing with some of the more subtle and sublime areas of your life experience. But without challenges, you would never learn or grow. The good news is that when your operational behavior is grooved to engage with everything that comes your way at all levels, based upon those dynamics, a deep alignment occurs and wondrous things emerge. You become highly productive. You make things up and you make them happen. The magic of mastering the mundane. People often wonder how I can sit with them at their desks, often for hours on end, as they empty their drawers, unpack all their unprocessed emails, and painstakingly go through the minutiae of stuff that they have let accumulate in their minds and their physical and virtual spaces. Aside from the common embarrassment they feel about the volume of their irresponsibly dealt with details, they assume I should be bored to tears. Quite the contrary. Much to my own surprise, I find it to be some of the most engaging work I do with people. I know the release and relief and freedom that sit on the other side of dealing with these things effectively. I know that we all need practice and support and a strong, clear focus to get through them until we have the built-in standards and behaviors we need to engage with them as they demand. Every time I notice a client identifying something in his environment or mind that is pulling on him, and in a few moments he processes it to silence, I know he's deepening a critically important pattern of behavior. And I know how significant a change these people may then experience in their relationships with their bosses, their partners, their spouses, their kids, and themselves over the next few hours and, we hope, days and years. It's not boring. It's some of the best work I do. Multi-level outcome management. I'm in the focus business. As a consultant, coach, and educator, I ask simple questions that often elicit very creative and intelligent responses from others, and even myself, which in turn add value to the situation and work at hand. People aren't any smarter after these sessions than they were before. They just direct and utilize their intelligence more productively. What's unique about the practical focus of GTD is the combination of effectiveness and efficiency that these methods can bring to every level of your reality. There are lots of inspirational sources for the high-level purpose, values, vision kind of thinking, and many more mundane tools for getting hold of smaller details such as phone numbers and appointments and grocery lists. The world has been rather barren, however, of practices that relate equally to both levels and tie them together. What does this mean to me? What do I want to be true about it? What's the next step required to make that happen? These are the cornerstone questions we must answer at some point about everything. This thinking and the tools that support it will serve you in ways you may not yet imagine. The power of natural planning. The value of natural project planning is that it provides an integrated, flexible, aligned way to think through any situation. Whereas the basic five-step process of capturing, clarifying, organizing, reflecting, and engaging is a coherent way to achieve stability across the whole spectrum of your life, natural planning produces relaxed, focused control in more specific areas. Challenging the purpose of anything you may be doing is healthy and mature. Being comfortable making up visions of success before the methods are clear is a phenomenal trait to strengthen. Being willing to have ideas, good or bad, and to express and capture all of them without judgment is critical for fully accessing creative intelligence. Honing multiple ideas and types of information into components, sequences, and priorities aimed toward a specific outcome is a necessary mental discipline. And deciding on and taking real next actions, actually moving on something in the physical world, is the essence of productivity. Being able to bring all these ingredients together with appropriate timing and balance is perhaps the major component of competence for this new millennium. But it's not yet the norm of much professional and personal behavior. Far from it. It's still a daunting task to apply this awareness to all the aspects of one's life. The natural planning model is natural, but in many cases it is not automatic. But even when only portions of the model are inserted, tremendous benefit ensues. The feedback I've gotten over the years with this model has continued to validate that even the slightest increase in the use of natural planning can bring significant improvement. To see brainstorming about almost every aspect of their lives becoming a standard for so many people is terrific. To hear from executives who have used the model as a way to frame key meetings and discussions and have gotten great value from doing so is gratifying. It all just affirms that the way our minds naturally work is what we should focus on to make anything happen in the physical world. The model is simply the basic principle of determining outcomes and actions for everything we consider to be our work. When those two key focus points become the norm in our day-to-day lives, the baseline for productivity moves to another level. The addition of brainstorming, the most creative means of expressing and capturing ideas, perspectives, and details about projects, makes for an elegant set of behaviors for staying relaxed and getting things done. Shifting to a positive organizational culture. It doesn't take a big change to increase the productivity standards of a group. I continually get feedback indicating that with a little implementation by a few key people, immediately things start to happen more quickly and more easily. The constructive evaluation of activities, asset allocations, communications, policies, and procedures against purposes and intended outcomes has become increasingly critical for every organization I know of. The challenges to our companies continue to mount, with pressures coming these days from globalization, competition, technology, shifting markets, erratic economic swings, and raised standards of performance and production, making outcome action thinking a required 21st century behavior. What do you want to have happen in this meeting? What is the purpose of this forum? What would the ideal person for this job be able to do? What do we want to accomplish with this software? These and a multitude of other similar questions are still sorely lacking in many quarters. There's plenty of talk in the big meetings that sounds good, but learning to ask, why are we doing this, and what will it look like when it's done successfully, and to apply the answers at the day-to-day operational level, that will create profound results. Commonly, the productivity issues expressed at senior levels in companies we work with are centered around email and meetings, too many of both, and too much time having to be spent dealing with seemingly non-strategic stuff within them. It is very easy for these communication media to morph into an unproductive maelstrom, draining energy. Unfocused meetings lead to unnecessary emails, which then produce the need for clarifying meetings, which produce more email, and so on. Both email and meetings are critical to organizational life, but too often they fall into the category of necessary evils, primarily because there is a lack of rigor relative to their purposes and desired outcomes. Empowerment naturally ensues for individuals as they move from complaining and victim modalities into outcomes and actions defined for direction. When that becomes the standard in a group, it creates significant improvement in the atmosphere as well as in the output. There are enough problems and opportunities to be concerned with. Negativity and passive resistance need to continually give way to a focus on the desired results at the appropriate horizons. The microcosm of how people deal with their intrays, email, and the conversation with others will be reflected in the macro reality of their culture and organization. If balls are dropped, if decisions about what to do are resisted on the front end, if not all the open loops are managed responsibly, that will be magnified in the group, and the culture will sustain a stressful fire and crisis siege mentality. If, in contrast, individuals are implementing the principles of getting things done, the culture will expect and experience a new standard of high performance. Problems and conflicts will not go away. They remain inherent as you attempt to change or maintain anything in this world. The operational behaviors of this book, however, will provide the focus and framework for addressing them in the most productive way. I am often asked, how can this methodology improve an organization? In fact, all the principles I put forward are as applicable to an enterprise as they are to an individual. Capturing what has a group's attention, getting clarity about the inherent outcomes desired and actions required, regularly reviewing status and incorporating new realities, and consistently recalibrating and reallocating resources, all are core best practices for any team or company. But just like you can't teach an organization to read, you can't expect to improve an organization per se with getting things done. To function at all in a knowledge economy, most organizations need people who read. The culture can provide training and support to ensure that occurs. They will also need people who have mastered the art of effectively getting things done to operate at the new levels being demanded in this century. When that is manifest in a company through its expectations, training, and modeling from the top down, the results in organizational output can be profound. Chapter 14, GTD and Cognitive Science. Since the first edition of Getting Things Done was published, significant research in the field of social and cognitive psychology has documented and validated the efficacy of the principles that underlie the methodology. Until recently, these practices could be confirmed only experientially and anecdotally. Anyone who had ever applied the GTD techniques of capturing, clarifying, organizing, and reflecting on the resulting inventory acknowledged the same results: greater clarity, control, and focus, along with all the resulting personal and organizational benefits associated with that experience. If you have, to any degree, begun to implement the practices I've put forward so far, you will no doubt have noticed some positive increase in your own demeanor. Rigorous studies compiled by experts in the field of cognitive science, ranging from personal to organizational aspects, have begun to provide data that gives foundational support to this methodology and why and how its improvements are produced. In some sense, this may seem like someone's proving that gravity exists after we've all been experiencing it and dealing with it since we were conscious. But from another perspective, it gives perhaps needed credence to the advice for mastering workflow I've put forward here, and to why such seemingly simple processes and behaviors described in Getting Things Done have such a compelling result. The supporting research has emerged within several frameworks and categories: positive psychology, distributed cognition, the value of an external mind, relieving the cognitive load of incompletions, flow theory, self-leadership theory, goal striving via implementation intentions, and psychological capital, PSYCAP. GTD and Positive Psychology. In 2000, Martin Seligman took on the presidency of the American Psychological Association. For his presidential address, he challenged the profession to shift its focus away from simply describing, studying, and diagnosing the negative aspects of the human condition, and to begin devoting more attention to the positive aspects of what it means to be human. Of course, his message was simply a more mainstream embodiment of Abraham Maslow's idea from the mid-20th century of personal fulfillment as the richest arena of psychology. But since Seligman's call to action, positive psychology has blossomed into a full-fledged component of the field. The research generated by this change in perspective has been conducted at both the basic and applied levels. It has added to our understanding of a myriad of psychological constructs and has been used to improve the lives of many. Positive psychology is a vast discipline, but a sampling of its relevant aspects includes happiness, psychological well-being, flow, optimal experience, meaning, passion, purpose, authentic leadership, strengths, values, character, and virtue. Graduate education programs in these areas have emerged across the world and continue to expand. How is this relevant to getting things done? GTD is more than just a way to manage tasks and projects. In many respects, it is more concerned with fundamental issues of meaningful work, mindful living, and psychological well-being than simply offering methods for being more efficient or productive for their own sake. The emphasis and requirement of outcome thinking concerning the stuff we encounter, as well as achieving a functional way to capture, clarify, organize, and assess the results so we can think more clearly, describes the core practices that truly make the actual experience of life better. That said, and experienced if you have, it is still quite interesting to examine some of the various theories and studies that have focused on the more specific aspects of the relationship of our psyche, our well-being, and our performance, all with close correlation to the principles and practices of getting things done. Distributed cognition, the value of an external mind. In 2008, a fascinating paper, Getting Things Done, The Science Behind Stress-Free Productivity, was published in a professional journal by Francis Heiligen and Clément Vidal, two researchers in Belgium who analyzed my methodology specifically from the perspective of verifiable data and working theories from cognitive science. Their brilliant and detailed assessments and conclusions extend far beyond what I can do justice to here. The paper is worthy of multiple reads, but suffice it to say that its thesis is profound. Your mind is designed to have ideas based upon pattern detection, but it isn't designed to remember much of anything. Because of the way the mind developed, it is brilliant at recognition, but terrible at recall. You can glance at today's calendar, and in the course of a few seconds get a coherent sense of the day and its contents and contexts, but you'd have a terrible time trying to recall the contents of the next 14 days on your calendar merely from memory. A wonderful exposition of the new discoveries in the science of cognition related to our limited capacity to manage and maintain awareness of relevant data in the information age, and the necessity of building and utilizing an external brain, was put forward by Daniel Levitin in his book, The Organized Mind. The bottom line is that when you use your memory as your organizing system, as most everyone on the planet still does for most of what they're doing to manage their lives, your mind will effectively become overwhelmed and incompetent because you are demanding of it intense work for which it is not well equipped. If, however, you're able to bring its attention to bear appropriately and efficiently to create the optimal triggers for later thinking and action, such as reading an email, then setting a meeting on your calendar to deal with its issue or opportunity, then it gets to relax and rely on the automatic and elegant thinking it can do when presented specific things on which to focus in the proper context. You trust you'll see that meeting on your calendar sufficiently in advance to be prepared for it. GTD provides the methodology for identifying those things that need focused attention, applying it efficiently on the front end, and organizing the triggers for appropriate thinking at the right time. The Belgian researchers crafted an elegant exposition of the science behind efficiently maximizing what our minds are good for and what they're not, creating a framework for how we can more effectively produce profound results with minimal thinking. Heiligen's background and experience is in analyzing insect behavior, how relatively brainless creatures produce phenomenally effective results. He makes a fascinating case for us humans to do likewise, with getting things done as a key platform. Relieving the cognitive load of incompletions. Much fruitful work has been done in the early part of this century by Dr. Roy Baumeister and others in determining the effects on consciousness of unfinished items, goals, projects, outcomes, etc., that have been committed to but not yet completed. His conclusions simply verify what I've experienced for decades. Uncompleted tasks take up room in the mind, which then limits clarity and focus. But interestingly, in alignment with the GTD practices, Baumeister has also proven that completion of such items is not required to relieve that burden on the psyche. What is needed is a trusted plan that ensures forward engagement will happen. In Baumeister's model, merely determining the next action to fulfill a commitment is a sufficient end result of planning, as long as the trigger or reminder is parked in a place that we trust will look within a reasonable amount of time. My thinking and model were heavily cited in his wonderful book, Willpower, which positions them within a rich context of managing the mental muscle we must continually employ, especially in knowledge work. Flow theory. One of the more popular concepts in this field, which has often been associated with GTD, has been the idea of flow, the state of optimal performance and engagement. Check out Mihai Csikszentmihalyi's book, Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience, for more details. Flow is what the athletes refer to as being in the zone, and it can be closely correlated with the idea of mind like water, which I introduced in the first chapter. The flow experience is marked by various distinct components, several of which are already implemented by the GTD approach. To experience flow, it is necessary that your skills in a given task match the challenge at hand. If the challenge exceeds your requisite skill level, you will experience anxiety. And if your skills exceed the challenge, you will most likely feel bored during the activity. Flow is usually accompanied by complete concentration on the given task, and you typically feel in control and have clear goals in sight. Individuals in flow generally have an idea of what is coming next and receive immediate feedback throughout the task. They also experience a merging of action and awareness, during which they lose both their self-consciousness and their sense of time. They are usually intrinsically motivated, performing an activity for its own sake and not for an external reward. Those in flow often are performing at an optimal level and are completely absorbed in what they are doing. Once individuals have experienced flow, they are often compelled to repeat the activities that enabled them to experience it. While flow was originally conceptualized by investigating leisure activities, for example, rock climbing, painting, Csikszentmihalyi and Lefebvre found that individuals are engaged in high-skill, high-challenge activities more often at work, 54%, than at leisure, 18%. Csikszentmihalyi explained that many jobs inherently contain the type of goals and feedback structures that would allow one to experience flow at work, a phenomenon that is associated with higher levels of subjective well-being. The GTD approach includes several conditions of the flow experience, namely having clear goals and receiving feedback. GTD's emphasis on focusing attention on one task at a time is closely associated with the crux of the flow experience, being completely absorbed in a singular activity, in which one's stimulus field is limited. Adopting GTD enables individuals to find flow more easily in their work and personal lives. By getting tasks out of the mind and into an external system, they can more easily see and track progress, which is a form of feedback. Having a complete picture of one's commitments in work and life can help individuals make better decisions about what to pay attention to in any given moment, which, in turn, will allow them to engage more fully in the task at hand, making flow a more likely outcome. Self-leadership theory. Self-leadership can be traced back to the mid-1980s as an expansion of the concept of self-management. According to Christopher Neck and Charles Mance, self-leadership is a process through which individuals control their own behavior influencing themselves through the use of specific behavioral and cognitive strategies. The popularity of self-leadership has soared via a large number of practitioner-oriented books, theoretical and empirical journal publications, inclusion in management and leadership textbooks, and the growth of self-leadership training programs. The strategies that comprise self-leadership are commonly separated into three categories: behavior-focused, natural reward, and constructive thought pattern. Behavior-focused strategies are usually centered on raising individual self-awareness with the goal of facilitating behavioral management. In the context of work, these strategies commonly place an emphasis on doing necessary but unpleasant tasks. This family of strategies includes self-observation, self-goal setting, self-reward, self-punishment, and self-cueing. Natural reward strategies are intended to create situations in which an individual is motivated or rewarded by the activity itself. These strategies revolve around reshaping unpleasant tasks or activities to make them more enjoyable and deliberately focusing attention on the inherently rewarding aspects of the activities. Constructive thought pattern strategies relate specifically to creating ways of thinking that can positively impact performance. Examples of these strategies include self-talk, mental imagery, and replacing dysfunctional beliefs and assumptions. There are aspects of GTD that connect to each of the three overall types of self-leadership. One of the most evident is the concept of self-cueing. A well-constructed GTD system provides for a physical artifact that spurs future action. The GTD methodology also embodies the component of natural reward strategies. There is a sense of pleasure in identifying small, yet annoying tasks and taking care of them, something a thorough mental RAM dump and some free time certainly make possible. Finally, a key element of GTD is the mental component of thinking of your work not simply as a series of large projects, but more directly as concrete next actions. This shift from a defeatist, overwhelmed attitude to the motivational state that enables you to move forward on such tasks is a great example of shifting your mindset in a positive way. Using self-leadership strategies has been shown to improve people's sense of self-efficacy, and self-efficacy is one of the most well-researched constructs when it comes to organizational psychology. It has been connected to job satisfaction, job performance, and other positive organizational behaviors for both traditional employees and entrepreneurs. Goal striving, attainment via implementation intentions. Goals, desired outcomes, are a vital part of life, and GTD can serve to facilitate both personal and professional goals. Peter Goldwitzer and Gabrielle Odingen have conducted a major line of research on goal achievement, incorporating the idea of implementation intentions. In a nutshell, they argue that the best way to ensure goal striving, taking actions toward a stated goal, is to create a cause and effect link in your mind about when certain goal-relevant actions will be taken. When you make plans, implementation intentions, ahead of time, and decide what actions will be carried out in which contexts, the proper behavior is nearly automatically enacted instead of being drawn from your limited reserve of willpower. In other words, if you can trust that something you will more or less do automatically will provide sufficient direction and juice to move you toward your outcome, you'll have that juice when needed. It won't be depleted by your constant worrying or thinking about what you should do and when. GTD and implementation intentions are linked through using the system as the trigger or prompt for taking outcome-directed action. For example, you could set the implementation intention: when I'm in my office with more than an hour of free time and a high level of energy, I'll look at my task list and select something challenging and important to work on. Or, when it is Sunday afternoon, I will conduct a weekly review. Or, when I'm feeling flustered and overwhelmed, I'll do a mental RAM dump. The number of such possible implementation intentions is truly endless. Psychological capital, PSICAP. Psychological capital, PSICAP, is a relatively new framework within which organizational psychologists are beginning to evaluate the overall resourceful state of workers and its effect. It consists of four definable aspects: self-efficacy, optimism, resilience, and hope. Self-efficacy is the confidence to take on and devote the necessary effort to succeed at challenging tasks. Optimism involves making positive attributions about succeeding now and in the future. Hope means persevering toward goals and, when necessary, redirecting paths to those goals. Resilience involves bouncing back to an original or even better state of being after facing adversity and problems. Individually, each of these variables can predict various outcomes to a certain degree. For example, someone's degree of optimism can correlate statistically with particular results or behaviors. However, when these four components are considered together in what psychologists now call PSYCHAP, you can predict much more than merely the sum of the effects of its component elements. In its relatively short history as a construct, PSYCHAP has been connected to many positive individual and organizational outcomes, such as job performance and psychological well-being. PSYCHAP is more of a description of a state than a trait itself. That is, it is something that can change or be changed, developed, or undermined almost minute to minute, as in the example of one's mood. In familiar terms, it would reflect the difference between your experiencing a good day or a bad day. Are you feeling on top of your game, or buried by it? The good news is that such states are malleable. You can do things that can change and improve them without having to change some inherent aspect of yourself. Getting things done relates directly to all four ingredients of a high PSYCHAP and its intended results. By enabling people to create and maintain a complete picture of their commitments to themselves and others in order to make good decisions about what to do or not do at any given moment, it automatically builds a sense of confidence and control, self-efficacy. Simply identifying all open loops and moving them from memory to an external mind while systematically identifying concrete and doable next actions is a pure exercise in self-control and directedness. An individual utilizing GTD knows exactly what needs to be done and exactly what action he can take to achieve it, given the restrictions of available time, energy, and contextual restraints. Adopting GTD sets people up for greater optimism because it enables them to draw connections between the successful completion of projects and their own purposeful and goal-directed efforts. Individuals identify meaningful projects, articulate the next steps needed to complete them, and then ideally follow through the process until the project is completed. As each win is achieved, it produces greater capacity for making more positive commitments. In addition, the focus on front-end decision-making in GTD, doing the work to define the work, can be viewed as an exercise in both aspects of hope, setting goals and identifying pathways to those goals. Individuals set goals, what does done look like, and identify the tasks needed to achieve those goals, what's the next action, during this front-end decision-making process. While no empirical data yet exists for the idea that those individuals who utilize GTD are more successful in recovering from failure, resilience, it's certainly been validated anecdotally for me from scores of the best and brightest individuals on the planet. Dealing with serious family emergencies or tumultuous changes in their jobs and careers, people have provided abundant testimonials to attest to their retained sanity, stability, and productivity by utilizing GTD practices. The methodology gives an individual a sense of calm and control over a difficult situation that allows them to use their mental faculties to address the task at hand and recalibrate multiple vectors in real time as needed. In a time of stress and other adversity, those individuals who are able to think most clearly and process the results more efficiently will be more likely to emerge from the stress in better shape than those who do not. The PSYCHAP model also provides a framework within which to understand why groups who have integrated GTD as a cultural standard experience a significant degree of moving up the food chain relative to how their organization responds, interacts, and produces results. Whether or not PSYCHAP develops further as a definable, verifiable, and developmental arena in organizational psychology, it's a great way to describe the mental, emotional, reflective, and even physical benefits of what you get from using GTD. Undoubtedly, during the coming years, we will see a continual stream of new scientific data that will validate what I've known was true from day one of my experience with this model and what has been shared by countless others. When all of our potentially meaningful things are captured, clarified, organized, and reflected upon, the more mature, elegant, and intelligent part of who we really are can show up at the table. That produces experiences and results that can't be beat. Chapter 15. The Path of GTD Mastery. GTD is actually a lifelong practice with multiple levels of mastery. It is very similar to playing an instrument like the violin, a sport like tennis, or a game like chess. It's like mathematics, pottery, art history, or even parenting. All of these endeavors involve learning and applying a particular set of moves and techniques, and there's no end to how good you can become at them, or how many subtleties there are to explore. GTD is the art of dealing with the stream of life's work and engagements, which itself is constantly evolving for all of us at any age or station. It's about identifying and navigating your commitments and interests from a state of confidence and flow. Your work and focus will change, often dramatically, over time. But engaging with all of it masterfully is a defined practice that can be learned and refined over a lifetime. Mastery does not refer to some final end state of a Zen-like peacefulness and enlightenment on a mountaintop, though that could be an optional nice expression of it. Rather, it's the demonstrated ability to consistently engage in productive behaviors as a means to achieve clarity, stability, and focus when it's desired or required, no matter what the challenge. How well you have developed that ability will be tested when you're confronted with things that are unclear, unstable, and distracting, which are natural and normal symptoms of any change in your world. The idea of mind like water doesn't assume that water is always undisturbed. On the contrary, water engages appropriately with disturbance instead of fighting against it. Over the course of life, such disturbances can range from dealing with your homework in the sixth grade, to the demands of your new job, to the vague sense of uneasiness about what to do when you retire. GTD mastery involves learning and incorporating its various best practices, and then integrating them in a holistic manner, which results in a much more dynamic experience than simply the sum of its parts. When you learn to play tennis, you focus on specific components of its moves, like the backhand, the forehand, the lob, and the serve. When you actually play a game of tennis, you then put them all together. As you increase your mastery, your focus matures to encompass an overall strategy. Similarly, mastering GTD involves an initial mastery of its segments, techniques, and tools, and then incorporating them as you play your whole life and work game. Your mastery will be reflected in your using an optimally integrated system and approach without thinking about it. The three tiers of mastery. Over the many years of engaging with people who have adopted the GTD methodology, I have noticed generally three stages of maturity they have demonstrated in using the model. 1. Employing the fundamentals of managing workflow. 2. Implementing a more elevated and integrated total life management system. And 3. Leveraging skills to create clear space and get things done for an ever-expansive expression and manifestation. A good analogy here is the experience of learning to drive a car. The first stage is getting the basics under control so that you can handle the machine without hurting yourself or anyone else. The moves feel awkward and often counterintuitive. But once you're good enough to get your license, your world changes dramatically for the better, because now you can go places and do things that you couldn't previously. Then there comes a time when you are able to drive down a road without actually thinking about the act of driving. It's become an almost automatic part of your life. And finally, you decide to graduate to a really high-performance vehicle in which the prime challenge and opportunity is how well you can focus ahead, making yourself essentially one with your vehicle, experiencing elevated levels of satisfaction and fulfillment with driving. Each of these stages is represented by the horizons of your focus and the application of specific techniques. At first, you're making what look like small, jerky movements, but what are actually very smooth movements focused on very short horizons. Then, as you gain comfort and familiarity with the process, you extend your focus to the next street corner or freeway exit. Then you can graduate to a more conscious and directed focus at multiple horizons, driving across town with total situational awareness. Similarly, as the techniques of getting things done become increasingly second nature, you shift your attention from the mechanics of your system to the results it produces. Mastering the basics. As simple as they may seem at first, building proficiency with the fundamental components of getting things done, the basics, can take a while. Though it's easy to understand and agree with its concepts and principles, putting them fully into practice is not necessarily a smooth or automatic process. It's the same as with any sophisticated practice, driving a car, throwing a karate punch, or playing the flute. The beginning moves are not familiar or comfortable. Once you've done them 1,000 times, however, you can manifest elegance, power, and fluidity that would be inaccessible any other way. The same may be true for you about learning GTD. For example, capturing everything potentially meaningful into trusted external buckets so that nothing remains rattling around in your head is a behavior that can be as daunting to employ as learning to manually shift easily in a car. As with most aspects of the GTD model, writing things down is itself not a new skill, but rather a practice that can easily seem unworthy of the effort, if not downright counterintuitive. If it's not immediately important, why should I bother? Becoming sensitized to the need to externalize those kinds of thoughts, as well as building the habit to actually carry out the necessary actions with a ubiquitous tool at hand, without exception, is the real challenge. Other basic practices, which, even if implemented initially, easily regress into incomplete, out-of-date, and therefore dysfunctional usage, include next action decision-making on stuff to do. Fully utilizing the waiting for category, such that every expected deliverable from others is inventoried and reviewed for follow-up in adequate timing. Using agenda lists to capture and manage communications with others. Keeping a simple, easily accessible filing and reference system. Keeping the calendar as pure, hard landscape without undermining its trustworthiness with extraneous inputs. And doing weekly reviews to keep one's system functional and current. It's easy to get off track. If you are sincere about implementing getting things done, it's actually not that difficult to get started, as I've tried to assure you with the instructions given in the earlier sections of the book. At some point, though, the rest of your reality will inevitably come flooding at you full force, and if the new practices haven't yet had time to root themselves in your behavior patterns, it's relatively easy to get blown off course. Most people are so used to keeping things in their heads that it's very easy to slip back into that familiar pattern. Deciding next actions requires a thrust of cognitive effort that seductively can be avoided if a particular situation is not in some critical mode. Making time for the weekly review, if it's not been instituted as a habit, can be a daunting challenge. All of that begins to result in a personal system that is incomplete and out of date. You'll no longer be able to trust your lists to give you the whole picture, and because the system is not really relieving pressure, you'll conclude it's not worth keeping up with anymore, and you might as well take it back into your head. In those circumstances, it's not uncommon for someone to wander off the track exponentially quickly. And it's easy to get back on. The good news is that it's as easy to get back into your productive groove as it may have been to get knocked out of it. It simply requires revisiting the basics. Get a pen and paper and empty your head again. Clean up your lists of actions and projects. Identify and add new projects and next actions to bring your lists current. Clean up what's leaked outside your system. This cycle of getting off track and getting back on again happens to almost everyone, particularly during this first level of mastering the basics of the game. In my experience, it can easily take as long as 2 years to finally get this stage of practice fully integrated into one's life and work style and consistently maintained. Another piece of good news is that even if a person has gleaned only a few concepts from this material or has not implemented the system regularly, it can bring marked improvement. If you get nothing more than the 2-minute rule, it will be worth its weight in gold. If you just write down a few more things on your mind than you would have previously, you'll sleep better. If you clean up email to zero, at least every once in a while, you will have great cause for celebration. And if you simply ask, what's the next action of yourself or anyone else, when you might not have otherwise, it will add to your stress-free productivity. Of course, the more those techniques begin to work together as a whole, systematically and consistently, the more dramatic will be the increase in the experience of relaxed, focused control. Mastering the basics is transformative for most everyone who achieves it. If you reach that stage, you will be getting many more things done, more quickly and more easily, and operating with greatly increased confidence in how you're dealing with the operational details of life. At this first tier of GTD mastery, you will be generally keeping yourself under control and focused on an hour-by-hour, day-by-day basis. Graduate level, integrated life management. At this point, you are ready to graduate to the next level. Having your hand on the helm of your life on a week-to-week, month-to-month, and even longer basis. This requires a more subtle level of awareness and practice. As I mentioned earlier, as you get better at driving a car, you are able to extend your horizon, which creates smoother moves, and you can focus more on where you're going than on the mechanism that's getting you there. Similarly, when you reach a certain level of maturity with the GTD process, you won't be as focused on the system itself or how you're working it, but will utilize it in more flexible, customized ways as your trusted tool to facilitate control and focus over longer and larger spans. Whereas the first level of mastery involves intrays, meetings, email, phone calls, agendas, waiting fors, reference systems, list management, getting the right tools, etc., this next tier is concerned with getting rigorous with the bigger issues that are driving the contents of the basic level. These specific actions and information exist because of their relevance to things larger than themselves, the projects we have to complete, the problems we need to solve, the areas of focus and interest we have in our complex lives. Why are you getting that email? What's the purpose of that meeting, and why do you have to attend? What's coming up next quarter that you need to start dealing with now? What projects need to become someday maybes, and vice versa, because of some of the larger changes going on? Mastery of the fundamentals, which provides the basics of effective and efficient execution, also provides the ability and room to address a higher level of control and focus. Projects, and how they are identified, managed, and understood in relation to one another and to the larger frameworks within which we operate. Developing comfort with an external mind frees up and leverages one's cognitive abilities, paving the way for many more creative and productive uses of an integrated self-management system. The hallmarks of this next level of maturity with getting things done are a complete, current, and clear inventory of projects, a working map of one's roles, accountabilities, and interests, personally and professionally, an integrated total life management system, custom-tailored to one's current needs and direction and utilized to dynamically steer out beyond the day-to-day, and challenges and surprises trigger your utilization of this methodology instead of throwing you out of it. When projects become the heartbeat of your operational system. Further down the path of mastering this methodology, you will reach a stage at which your projects list becomes more the driver rather than a reflection of your next action lists, and your projects themselves will become a truer reflection of your roles, areas of focus, and interests. At this point, the center of gravity of your self-management system will have moved from the ground-level horizon to somewhere between Horizon 1 and Horizon 2. Refer to Chapter 2. Though it is central to an ongoing experience of stress-free productivity, very few people, even among those who have been engaged with getting things done for years, actually walk around with a complete inventory of their projects, objectively and regularly reviewed. Those who do reach this level, however, and come to realize its power, make that the principal list from which they navigate. Given my broad definition of project, any outcome requiring more than one step that you're committed to achieve within a year, it might be challenging enough for you to delineate all of those things, even if they are clear. Get new tires, fix the printer, find a new babysitter, etc. But the real expression of maturity here is the inclusion of the more subtle desired outcomes definable as doable events. Clarify Frank's new role on the team. Research options for improving Bettina's math grades. Resolve property boundary issue with neighbor, etc. A signpost of GTD mastery at this stage, and indeed life mastery, is when one recognizes anything that has his or her attention, concerns, worries, problems, issues, tensions, and translates them into achievable outcomes, projects, to be executed with concrete next actions. Most people resist acknowledging issues and opportunities until they know they can be handled successfully, not realizing that exploring, looking into, or in some way accepting or putting something to bed because there is no solution is an appropriate outcome or project itself. The ability to create appropriate engagement with your neighbor's boundary issue, your daughter's math grades, or the role of a new team member, no matter how ambiguous or unclear the actual path for achieving each may be, by identifying the inherent project and taking steps to resolve it, is quite an extraordinary and mature self-management practice. Assessing and populating your projects list from your areas of focus. Everything we do is serving some aspect of the roles and accountabilities we have taken on, or an area of interest and engagement in our lives. I call my brother just to check in and say hello, because family relationships is an area that has meaning for me. I buy groceries because I consider health and vitality important. I produce an agenda for a board meeting because I need to maintain corporate oversight in my role in my company. Whenever people actually produce a checklist for this horizon, the areas of professional and personal focus they can identify, they invariably realize that there are more projects they need to add. They will also usually realize that they have not been paying appropriate attention to some aspect of either their work or their personal life, or both, and they are motivated to bring more balance and wholeness to their projects list. An integrated total life management system. The third aspect of this stage of mastery is that your system will have become not just a conglomeration of various lists, information, applications, and tools, but rather a cohesive control room with all its components working together to engage effectively with whatever circumstance arises. You will have attained the ability to customize your lists and categories and how you use them in response to changes in your world and your own increasing sophistication with the possibilities. This is a reflection of a functional awareness of GTD. You understand the essence and recognize the value of the various parts of the model, and therefore have the freedom to tailor how they are implemented to best serve your needs. You could build your own application of the GTD system from scratch, if need be, with your own tools at hand. You are guided by the principle of creating and engaging with the necessary orientation maps to ensure you are appropriately focused as required for a given situation. You're not at a loss about what to do with anything. A business card you collected at a lunch meeting, a harebrained idea you woke up with this morning about a project you might want to launch, an unexpected private invitation to a major gala event, or your blood panel report from your last medical checkup. You can create the right placeholder for any type of potentially meaningful data. You can also easily get a sense of your priorities for an upcoming trip. You have everything you need at hand for the next webinar you're conducting. It would take minimal effort to pull together a company overview for your bank, and you can quickly create a rich context for a family conversation about plans for the next 2 years. You have a dynamic, working dashboard that serves your orientation for virtually any context, whether at home, at the office, or in transit, seamlessly. Pressure produces greater rather than reduced utilization of these practices. One of the most common observations I hear from people who have at some point bought into the GTD process, but have not progressed particularly far with it, is that they fell away from it because they had an intense series of back-to-back business trips, or an extended bout of the flu, or an unexpected crisis occurred with a major client, or were asked to run a major project in addition to their regular job, or, and so on. And one of the most common things I hear from people who have matured with their application of and experience with the methodology is that applying getting things done is the very thing that enabled them to negotiate these kinds of tense situations with much more effectiveness and much less stress. So a significant hallmark of progress in the path of mastery at this stage is that very transition point when issues and opportunities galvanize GTD practices instead of causing its users to abandon them. When a new problem explodes at work, you can get back in control quickly with a new mind sweep instead of taking everything back up into your head. You identify desired outcomes, projects, and next actions about this circumstance as soon as you can, as opposed to simply worrying about what's happened. You actually do a weekly review in the middle of the week because you need that kind of elevated focus to recalibrate your work instead of reverting back to latest and loudest as your priority criterion. Operating at this level of GTD mastery is achievable and truly elegant. The experience, for those who do achieve it, is one of establishing the conditions to flourish. What flourish means and looks like for a 24-year-old rock musician will likely be very different than for a 54-year-old attorney with 3 kids, but the expanded experience and the process of how they got there with GTD are identical. Postgraduate. Focus, direction, and creativity. Once you have incorporated the basic elements of getting things done and integrated the more elevated aspects of your commitments of life and work into a trusted and customized systemic approach, the next frontier opens, using clear internal space to optimize your experience ad infinitum. This mastery level involves 2 key aspects. First, utilizing your freed up focus for exploring the more elevated aspects of your commitments and values. And second, leveraging your external mind to produce novel value. Freedom to engage in the most meaningful things. Once you really know and trust you can and will execute effectively anything that lands in your in-tray, you will have the freedom to toss anything into your own in-tray, whether it's your next crazy idea, a possible new technology to research, a book you might want to write, or an NGO website that almost brought you to tears that you'd like to support. The power to produce produces powerful possibilities. One of my favorite sayings is, the better you get, the better you'd better get. The more confidence you have that you can actually manifest things before you have all the knowledge and resources you might need, the more you can potentially overwhelm yourself with your own possibilities. So, the clarity and confidence that your GTD practices allow simultaneously demand their ongoing utilization. And, as I hope I've made clear throughout this book, the ability to put your attention on the more subtle and elevated levels of your life and work to a large degree depends on your being able to put to bed the inevitably necessary more operational and mundane aspects that, without your appropriate engagement, can easily distract and exhaust your creative focus. I applaud the people who can sufficiently compartmentalize their consciousness to be able to draft a movie script, craft a vision statement for their NGO, or write the perfect poem for their wedding vows, with all the stuff of unanswered emails, crashed computer, taxes to be filed, mother-in-law's complaints about the wedding program, and needed bank credit line extension still impinging on their psyches. I do know that if all those issues were quieted with appropriate engagement from a GTD perspective, the space and inspiration for the more creative activities would be tremendously enhanced. The negative effect on focus and performance of the cognitive load of these kinds of open loops has now been documented. Many people attest to their ability to leave work at work and drop everything to focus on the creative pursuits that interest them, but in my experience, that's only because they don't have a reference point of what their lives would be like without that pressure to begin with. The lack of pervasive angst about the details of your daily life also makes it much easier to shift your attention to the direction and qualities of experience that really matter. As I indicated in Chapter 2, the upper horizons of focus, goals, vision, purpose, and principles, are the defining criteria for your priorities. But most people find the ability to concentrate on and execute them effectively elusive at best and avoided and guilt-producing at worst. A distraction-free mind won't by itself get you to think about wild success scenarios 5 years in the future. You still have to consciously direct your attention to those matters, but it does make it infinitely easier to engage in such an exercise productively. Leveraging your external mind. Once you are regularly functioning at this level of mastery, The creative thrust of your GTD-ing shifts from implementing the most effective way of dealing with the inputs and inherent demands of your day-to-day world to optimally taking advantage of self-created contexts and triggers to produce creative ideas, perspectives, and actions that wouldn't normally occur. For instance, if you have ever needed to purge and bring up to date a contact manager, as you've reviewed old and potentially out-of-date entries of people and businesses, you've invariably come across items that caused you to tell yourself, you know, I really ought to get in touch with her again, given what I'm now doing in my business. If that kind of catalyzed thought has ever turned into something in any way valuable, then you've tasted at least a tiny bit of what could be infinitely more utilized. How many more ideas could any of us have had today that would have potentially added value to some aspect of our relationships, work, and creative expressions, had we only brought the right things into our conscious focus with the ability to capture what might show up? This highly creative and productive reflection activity automatically occurs in something like the weekly review, when you are glancing at past and future calendar items. Oh, that reminds me. And updating your projects and next actions lists. Ah, now I need to. Regularly assessing your someday maybe contents offers an even more expansive berth. You know, I think I really am going to take a painting class. But how many other aspects of your experience and relationships could be enhanced with the same kind of triggers for reflection? What other contents, reviewed with some consistency, might reveal valuable ideas? It's challenging enough to build in regular catch-up behaviors, but the possibilities of going beyond them are endless. This is the stage of maturity along the GTD path of mastery in which the simple idea of checklists takes on sublime significance. As cognitive scientists have validated, your mind is terrible at recalling things out of the blue, but it is fantastic at doing creative thinking about what it has directly in front of it to evaluate. When freed from the remembering function, the mind is a fabulous mechanism to put in play by putting things in front of the door, so you don't have to think too hard about what to think about. How often would you like to be reminded to think about your significant family members? What specifically would be good to remind yourself to think about when you think about your partner, your son, your sister? Whom would you consider to be on your A-list in your professional network? The people whose influence and interactions with you are most valuable? How often should you review that list? What affirmations and inspirational writings would serve you to reconnect with, and at what intervals? There are obviously an infinite number of opportunities any of us could take advantage of to add value to our world, with the right kind of structure established to relieve our psyche of the jobs it does not do well, and to leverage what it does wonderfully. But that will not happen by itself. It is a hallmark of this advanced level of GTD mastery that you recognize that dynamic and use your intelligence to leverage itself. It's having the freedom to generate and develop ideas without constraint, and then utilizing the practice of processing and organizing those notes and thoughts appropriately. It's the smartest individuals who realize they are only randomly in their smarts and inspired. They're the ones who intelligently build in systems and processes to take advantage of the brilliance that often simply lies sleeping behind the dullness required to deal with the brutish world we inhabit. This path of GTD mastery, incorporating the fundamentals, utilizing an elevated and integrated system, and leveraging creative directional focus, is not actually as limited sequentially as I have laid it out. Most everyone manifests aspects and portions of all of these levels in his or her own practices, and I have often met novices in some field who had some extraordinarily advanced moves. But in my experience, when the whole gestalt of stress-free productivity is taken into consideration, it requires a solid progression that does not have shortcuts. You can't really maintain a sense of week-to-week control if your email is in chaos. You won't really be free to engage with your long-range planning or vision if you don't have a grip on the current reality of the actual inventory of your 75 projects. You are continually involved in all of these levels, consciously or unconsciously, explicitly or implicitly. You have appointments, projects, actions, goals, and values, and as a professional, you will find that your work has its own set of commitments within which you must operate. Your mastery of getting things done will simply reflect the elegant equanimity with which you are engaged with all of them, the unexpected email with the major problem that just appeared, your Aunt Martha's birthday this week, the potential change in strategy for your company, and the new piece of cookware you realize you want. Each is dealt with quickly, smoothly, and in an appropriate context, leaving nothing on your mind other than what's present in the moment. Conclusion. I hope this book has been useful, that you have started to reap the rewards of getting more done with less effort and stress. And I really hope you have tasted the freedom of a mind like water and the release of your creative energies that can be the result of the application of these techniques. Those who begin to implement GTD methods always discover there's more here than meets the eye, and you may have already begun to experience your own version of that. I'm willing to bet that getting things done has validated much of what you already know and have been doing to some degree in your personal and professional life all along. Perhaps, though, this book will make it much easier for you to apply that common sense more systematically in a world that seems to increasingly confound us with its intensity and complexity. My intent is not to add more to the plethora of modern theories and models about how to be successful. I have tried, on the contrary, to define the core methods that don't change with particular fashions, and that, when applied, always work. As with gravity, when you understand the basic principle, you can operate a lot more effectively, no matter what you're doing. Perhaps this is the leading edge of back to basics. Getting things done is a roadmap to achieve the positive, relaxed focus that characterizes your most productive state. I invite you to use it, like a roadmap, as a reference tool to get back there whenever you need to. Here are some final tips for moving forward. Get your personal physical organization hardware set up. Get your workstation organized. Get in trays. Create a workable and easily accessed personal reference system for work and home. Get a good list management organizer that you are inspired to play with. Give yourself permission to make any changes that you have been contemplating for enhancing your work environments. Hang pictures, buy pens, toss stuff, and rearrange your workspace. Support your fresh start. Set aside time when you can tackle one whole area of your office and then each part of your house. Gather everything into your system and work through the getting things done process. Share anything of value you've gleaned from this with someone else. It's the fastest way to learn. Review getting things done again in 3 to 6 months. You'll notice things you might have missed the first time through, and I guarantee it will seem like a whole new book. Stay in touch with people who are broadcasting and reflecting these behaviors and standards. We're available. Visit gettingthingsdone.com anytime for tons of free support material, conversations and stories about these best practices from people like you, current information about supportive products and services, and access to our global network of people sharing in this methodology. Have a great rest of your life.
Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity, was written and read by David Allen. It was recorded by Madhuk van Zalk at Ear Force Studios in Amsterdam. Editing by Christina Pachano, with post-production by Hudson Sound. The associate producer was Michael Noble. Getting Things Done was produced and directed by Karen Perlman. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio, Ready for Anything, 52 Productivity Principles for Work and Life, written and read by David Allen.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.